Hello, listener. What you're about to hear is a What Are We Da Show patron unlock. This is material which our Patreon supporters have early access to. If you'd like to experience these episodes when they're at their freshest, become a What Are We Da Show patron today at patreon.com/WARUIDESHOU.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs. Welcome to Friday the 13th. Sorry, wrong podcast. I had the wrong script in front of me. I'm terribly sorry about it. No. This is not, you know, the occult hour here at Warrior Death Show. It is, in fact, second stream, and we're covering Given number 10, or Give 10, as we call it. I am, of course, you know, bald anger man himself, Shaden, and joining me, you know, from across the pond, but always close to my heart, is, you know, very good friend of mine, the Soul Doctor.
Hello, Captain Doug. Greetings. Due to what happened a moment ago, I may or may not have wet myself. That was a very scary intro that you graced us with.
Thank you. I work very hard on the evil laugh. It's great. I often burst out into it randomly, like, you know, I'm just there, like, you know, at a till, and I'm just going, and then she goes, sir, like, you haven't paid yet. Oh, so, sorry, terribly sorry. Do you, I don't have exact change. I'm sorry. Oh, my. So, yes.
But I do have a debit card.
You're not ready for my Amex. Amex is cursed.
No limits. You know, I do that, truth be told, also sometimes at home when I'm kind of being self-involved and lost in thought or something happens that I find particularly amusing. And my youngest son will just be like, Daddy, can you stop? He doesn't enjoy that. Not that he's scared, he's just annoyed.
He's going to be saying that exact same thing when he's much older, you know. Daddy.
Yeah.
Oh, Dad, can you just stop, please? Dad?
Old man, please. Shut it down.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Trying to be cool over here.
Trying. Just also getting committed while you're at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 2-for-1 deal. But anyway, we are, of course, here today to talk about Given Episode 10, Wonderwall. You know,
baby.
Yeah. You're going to be the one that saves me.
Saves me.
And I'm like, that's not possibly relevant to the events of the show in any way, shape, or form. I don't believe that for a moment. You'd think that they were picking these songs randomly.
They were. They definitely are.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, by the way, Given is now the number one in Japanese properties recommending playlists for Spotify, unseating Metal Gear Solid V: The Phantom Pain from that role. Mainly because Metal Gear Solid V is a, you know, deeply flawed clusterfuck of a game and a story, whereas Given, you know, you get the playlist and you also get a great story to go with it. So, thank you very much for that, Given. You defeated Hideo Kojima. Well done.
He will rise again shortly, though. I'm confident.
I'm sure he will with his, you know, pissing simulator Death Stranding, but we're not going to talk about that.
No, not today.
No. We'll take the piss out of the pissing simulator a different time. Okay, so, babbling aside, let's talk about the episode. But just as a quick reminder here, this is our second stream format. What does that mean, you might wonder? Well, again, it's not nothing to do with, you know, the stream of piss that is coming out of Death Stranding. But rather...
I knew it was coming.
Of course you did. Come on, how could I not? Someone would have pointed out if I hadn't. But rather, this is kind of like our regular stream of format, But rather than going into extensive detail about the plot and making quips and such as we go along, we're just going to cut straight to the meat, straight to the good stuff, straight to the discussion. So we're going to assume that you've already got the full context of the episode by actually having watched it. And if you have not, then there will be spoilers and in-depth discussion from here on out. No holds barred. So now is your chance to bail out if you want to go catch Wonderwall and probably listen to the song as well while you're at it, because it's a good track. I like it. But otherwise, we're going to get started right away. So I'm going to pass, you know, the baton over to you, Doc. Do you have a talking point to lead off with about episode 10?
Well, it's funny that you should... pass me the talking point baton this week of all weeks.
Uh-oh.
To start it off, because, like, honestly, Shadon, this is one of those episodes that I feel like thematically, I mean, there's a, in terms of new ground, like, maybe, like, a little bit here, but, like, I feel like the show is kind of, for lack of a better phrase, kind of playing the hits, read the themes, and kind of there's just like a lot of really fun stuff that happens. There's one sort of ominous thing that happens toward the end of the episode that I quite frankly am worried about because I get paranoid about these kinds of things. But no, I mean, I think like, gosh, the only big point that I have at the minute is that I found like the fact that Mafuyu this episode is thinking about the future to be really heartening because, you know, as we talked about last time, grief can really kind of put you in a place where you're only trying to survive and it's hard enough to focus on the here and now and getting through each moment. And the fact that, like, you know, he with the live performance and preparing for it helped. That all helped him get to kind of a new emotional and mental plateau. And he's at a point now where he can think about the future. He can plan. He can say, I want to write this song in the future. Next time we do a live show, I want to like have these feelings again. And that like looking forward to things is such a huge step. And I'm so happy for him that he is in that headspace.
Well, you're not wrong there, because I had a different talking point to start with. I've got a few, actually. But you've just, with your talk there about the future, you've just brought up something really important, which is the band's name and how it changes. Because now, you know, they've done the title drop. The seasons have gone, and now we have Given as the band name instead. And that might, on its surface, seem like...
Gavens. Oh. That was so stupid and great. I loved it so much. Aki, just Gavens.
It's just basically the same as the original Spider-Man film skit, like the human spider. What? That's lame. Thank you for that, Bruce Campbell. But anyway, why is this more important than simply being just an aesthetic choice and just a title drop? Because think about what seasons are conceptually. They're cyclic. You know, they keep going back around always, inevitably and immutably. Climate change notwithstanding, but we're not against that right now. So the fact that they have now transitioned away from this cyclic nature that they've imposed on themselves by calling them the seasons, and now just taking on a different name entirely, I think that's quite important. I think it's another signifier of how the status quo has changed since the previous episode, now that Matthew's finally, you know, got his voice out there, when he has come to terms with his feelings. Doesn't mean all the problems are resolved, mind you. It was, you know, they're not walking off into the sunset yet. But I do think that the name change has more significance than simply just being that.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is an interesting wrinkle here, that and signifier, as you say, that perhaps the cycle that Mafuyu in particular, and maybe some of the other ones, like, were kind of in, maybe the boys are ready to take steps forward to move on. Yeah, no, I thought that was great.
Well, there's a definite sign of that, given what happens with Akiko and Yayoi at the very start of the episode, but I will come back to that later, because... I'm going to, you know, once again, turn the screw in and all that on that particular plot point, although not as in the same way as I would previously, but I'll elaborate later. What I do want to talk about instead, though, and this is going to be my big all-encompassing point here, is I want to talk about comedy. And specifically, I want to talk about its application and its use. So for me, some of the greatest shows that I've ever seen in anime specifically do a wonderful job of blending both their comedy and their drama perfectly from scene to scene, from moment to moment, without ever feeling jarring, where the comedy doesn't like weaken the drama, or vice versa for that matter. Land of the Lustrous, one of my favorite shows of all time, is such a perfect example of that. All throughout, there's plenty of jokes being cracked, you know, there's a nice bit of situational comedy here and there, but it never ever detracts or weakens the dramatic beats and the darker moments of that show's run. It's one of the best examples I can personally think of modern anime that accomplishes that well. Now, that being said, doesn't mean you have to continually weave these in together throughout the entirety of your show's run. You can apply comedy to a show for a different purpose, if need be, to help sell the tone, to accentuate it. So if you think back over the course of Given thus far, like, there have been comedic beats here and there, don't get me wrong, but they've mostly been very subtle. There haven't been really many visual beats or tricks with that. And yet, this episode is chock full of them. We've got Ueno-Yama's own, like, paranoid fantasies, including Ueno-Yama in space!
That was great.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
I really want to believe that's a Flight of the Conchords reference to the Bowie's in space.
Bowie's, right. Right. David, are you there, David?
This is Bowie out to Bowie. I can't sing it. I'm only going to do a disservice to Jermaine and Brett there. I think they would probably approve of Given, by the way, those two. I don't know what Murray would think, but then again, Murray's an idiot anyway, so fuck that guy.
He was good in Voltron.
That's true.
He's a voice in that show. He was great. Just basically the same voice, by the way. Prison, like that whole thing. Like just does that same voice.
Oh, now I'm thinking of the Cheer Up Murray song. Cheer up, Murray. You've got a dog and he loves you, Murray. And this begins my karaoke career. This will never happen again. I'm so sorry. Anyway, back onto the topic. So there are a lot more visual comedic beats in this episode. I mean, we've got stuff like Haruki's own, like, flustered nature when he gets handed the USB pen drive. We've got the completely unexplained, and thank God it is, explosion of smoke around Ueno-Yama when he visits Matthew's apartment.
I'm so happy you brought this up because
yeah,
I was just like, what the fuck? And then what happened?
And then when the band chooses a new name and then orders food, like, Matthew's like, wait, what, don't I get a say? And everyone's like, no, I've already decided. And he just kind of melts away into the background. Or the incredible insert shot that you yourself posted in our Discord of Haruki and Akihiko just, like, throwing up horns when he... Yeah. So there's... But that's the thing, like, pound for pound, this episode has so much more visual comedy in it than previous episodes in this show's run. And I don't think that's by accident. I think that's a deliberate intent to show how the band is now settling into this new status quo, where they're much more lighthearted and amicable with each other, rather than how it was in the run-ups to the previous episodes prior to the gig, where they were all very, well, wound up tight, I suppose is the phrase for it. The comedy in this show is not just being woven into it like is Land of the Lustrous, just for, you know, like, say, taking a moment off from the darkness of it consistently throughout. It's very deliberately been loaded at this particular episode as a come down from the previous ones, but also to help relate the band's new relationship to us. That, you know, hey, we've been through a little bit of a rough spot, but we've got over the hump, and now we're going to enjoy ourselves a little bit. And I think that that's really, really impressive in terms of the writing, that it can do that where it's both funny, but it's also intentional to help accentuate the tone. Like, you know, we've got over the bad part of it, but now we can just relax. We can be ourselves. We can goof off a little bit. I thought it was excellently handled here.
Yeah. Yeah. It really accomplishes a lot, right? I mean, it further endears the characters to us. It gives us a chance to see softer sides of all the boys and funnier sides of them. But it's also for us too, right? Because, you know, taking the analogy of a concert set list, if you fucking throw out, like, just bangers and aggressive, you know, a relentless set of those tracks, you're going to tire yourselves out and also your audience. And so this is, as you say, like a come down. It's a nice, chill moment. Some downtime with the boys after all the intensity of last week.
Indeed, indeed. So yeah, that was excellent. Do you have anything else you want to add, Doc? Any other points to bring up?
Let's see. So, well, look, this is not really a point to bring up, but I wish I had laid an actual wager with you about Kasai not getting another line until the very end. Not getting another line in the whole show because...
I was as surprised as you are, I will not even lie. I thought I really would have thought, like, and I'm talking from the perspective of a writer here, never mind, you know, just as someone who watches the show, I thought, well, she's served a purpose, that's it, she can bugger off. In fact, I'll say this, what stunned me more was the fact that we actually got introduced to Aonoyama's father this episode. Like, where the
I know,
fuck
new characters! New characters are coming thick and fast.
I honestly thought he was more shocked that his father had turned up. I thought they were like, you know, like, who the fuck are you? You're my dad?
No. Yeah, first is Waka, and then, you know, Mr. Uenoyama. Crazy.
I'm stunned, honestly.
But yeah, she got to say, I mean, not that it was, like, in any way agency giving or character building. It very much was serve the boys in the story, that little bit of a dialogue she got, but she got it, and I like laughed and wrote it down because I remembered what you said. But the an actual point, I guess, is that so again, talking about the way Mafuyu has changed over the course of the show. Yeah, I don't remember if I said this last week, but if I did, I just want to again point out that I think it's important how we characterize the change. I think we it could be easy, I guess, to say, well, Mafuyu has gone back to his old self, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, in some senses, is true, but I don't think that paints a complete picture. I think what has happened is, if I may borrow a Hegelian term, a synthesis, right?
Ah, yes, yes, you're right.
Yeah, you had his kind of pre-big trauma event self, and you kind of, we got a glimpse of how that was last time in the extended flashback. And you have his... well, how he presented himself, how he was early on in this season of Given, extremely inwardly focused, myopic, well, myopic's not right, but just quiet and inward and very lonely, kind of isolated. And aspects of those two presentations, those two facets of his personality, I think have merged together. And what he is now isn't just like a return, it's like a new step forward into this kind of new self that combines different aspects of how he was at different times. It represents like a growth forward because he not only is more verbal, he's more outwardly focused, talks more personality. He's also carrying that maturity with him and that life experience that really, I think, marks him as a changed and different person than he was before all this happened.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, this is where the relationship between him and Ueniyama now switches, because as you say, like, it is a synthesis, but there are cadences and mannerisms to his talk and to his talking and his dialogue in this episode that are very reminiscent of what we see from the previous flashbacks with Yuki, when, you know, he obviously Yuki was still around. And he really, as you say, like, just kind of returns to that point, but he still brought all those experiences with him. He hasn't forgotten about them. And it's now up to Aonoyama to actually continue building from his previous experience. Like, oh my God, I kissed him. And now what? Now how do I feel? Now what do I do? Indeed, Mafuyu takes him out to a date spot completely without his knowledge or understanding and says to him, I love him, and he's now got to deal with that. It was very, very sweet, by the way. And kudos,
so good.
Kudos to the camera, by the way, because I think one of the things about a good boy love show, at least as I understand it at the moment, is that sometimes it's good to see characters up in that kind of close frame as the people in the show see them. So when we get those close-up, like, quick cuts of, like, various shots of Matthew as he's smiling and looking out over the shoreline, that's from Ueniyama's perspective. We see him as Ueniyama does. And I really, really appreciate that, even as someone who is this material is not really designed for, I still appreciate that that's what they're going for, and they're being doing it very effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that scene... God, that scene ruled at the end of the episode.
Mm.
But we got the big smile from Mafuyu. We may have seen him smile a bit before, but God, this was just like the whole shot was filled with his smile. And like it was just, I don't know, he just created this presence with it. And it shook Ritsuka. Like, he couldn't look at him because he was so moving. And goddamn, I loved that. And we had the, like you said, we had the, was it the Kokuhaku, the love confession?
Yeah.
And fucking, yes, Ueno-yama, you accept that shit. I don't want this, like, well, I turned you down, but, like, you know, we still hung out exactly the same, and everything was exactly the same as it was before, even though I turned you down.
Well,
let me just say, you know what? I got pissed at the beginning of this. I don't think... the show, I don't think that what happens is like the worst version of this, but like a lot of times in anime, in any kind of romance, whether it be gay one, a straight one, whatever, like the characters will like have a moment. They'll cross a threshold in their relationship. Significant thing has happened that is meant to change the way things were going forward.
Yeah.
But somehow fucking they end up walking that shit back and the characters get to be awkward again and like act like, you know, maybe it didn't happen. And, you know, this episode started out that way because Ritsuko was very much like, oh, like, I don't, how does he feel about me? It all happened so fast. Maybe we should just forget about it. Maybe I don't know. Like, what if he doesn't, it's hard to be around him. It's now awkward. Yeah. When, like, I think they hit the right note because doing something like that and not talking about it before or after, like, it's understandable that the two would want to wait for the right moment to kind of figure out what happened there. And it's understandable that someone like Ueno-yama would feel awkward about what kind of him expressing himself in that way because... you know, he's never been with or a guy or anything like that. Like, and so I think that, like, them, I don't even know if I would call it walking it back, but still having this kind of awkward phase, actually, like, it felt realistic. It felt like what would sort of organically happen between the two. And we got some nice comedic moments as well out of it. So it ended up being fine.
I think it's very authentic. I don't think it's like easy or possible even really to simply go from, especially given like, you know, that Ueniyama, you know, he's just realized his own sexuality. Going simply from recognizing that to being completely and utterly comfortable within his own skin, I think would probably be asking too much. And I think that's true, even, like, you know, of heterosexual people. Like, I've, speaking for myself here, it is some embarrassing history of my own. Like, I've met and kissed women out, like, in clubs and such in the past. And I've been out on dates from after the facts. And I'll tell you for free, like, 9 times out of 10, when I was on the way to go and meet them on that date, most of the time in transit, all I could think of was, oh, God, what was I doing? Like, as in, like, was I embarrassing myself? What on earth did they think of me? Like, you know, if I just ignore the phone call, will that be fine? Like, so I think it's a very natural and human reaction to be anxious about something, like, so pivotal, like, where the moment is perfect. But then afterwards, you can't help but notice all the little naggly minutiae around it, like, that even might not be true, but you perceive it to be so. So I totally understood his reaction. I thought it was very authentic as opposed to simply waking up and doing, like, you know, a Walton's like walking down the stairs, like da da da, ha, ha, like smoking a pipe, whatever, like super happy, that kind of thing, you know, like business as usual.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true. I will add, by the way, that when you said all that stuff about walking it back, I just realized how incredibly glad I am that the next episode is called Song 2 after Blur's Song 2, as opposed to Mr. Brightside. Because it was only a kiss. It was only a kiss. How did it end up like this?
That would be bad.
Yeah.
That would be so bad. I would hate everything if that were the name of it.
Man, we're getting more Killers references into our podcast every time we do a show. It's great, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Hmm.
So, it shows that despite the fact that we're not soldiers, we in fact have soul.
Oh, God. I don't even know what that line is. Like, I keep thinking back
no
to
one
this.
Knows.
I'm just
no
like,
one understands
that,
it.
That's something that someone thought was super cool, and I just think, God, this is forced as shit.
It sounds so dumb.
It really does. You know what this line is, boys? This is Grammy material. It's like Oscar bait, but for music. Anyway.
You can't say a soldier without the word soul. Oh, wait a minute. What if we reverse that and deconstruct? Oh, we're fucking geniuses. Oh my God, Brandon, write it down.
Brandon. I don't even know if that's the person's name, but I don't care.
It is. It's Brandon Flowers, I think he's called, the singer.
Brandon Flowers.
I think that's accurate. I'm going to Google that as you talk.
All right. So yeah, like, just to go back to the shift in relationship, though, like, we get other things like, even when he's sick,
yes.
Matthew's, like, you know, saying, just stay a little longer. Like, he doesn't outright state his reasoning, but it's very apparent that he's like, you know, you can hang around for a bit. Whereas Rainey Arm is just like, oh, God, what do I do? How do I interact with the human in front of me? That's actually more like an alien.
And it's not like, you know, to lend credence to what you're saying and what you have been saying, it's not like Sato Mafuyu is like fantastic at interacting with people and holding small talk and making awkwardness easier. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of only going to amplify those feelings.
Yeah, like when Uenia was just shaking him by the head, like doing the George Ramsay idiot sandwich thing. Yeah, he's had his moments of being difficult before, but with a very good reason, mind you. All right, do you have another talking point, or can I move on to the next one? Because I've still got more.
You got more. I mean, I think the only other substantive thing I wanted to mention was the thing that I'm paranoid about. Do you want to save that for later?
I didn't explicitly write this down as a point to talk about, but I have a feeling I know what you're talking about, which is it Ugetsu?
It would be.
Indeed. I knew it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about this now, or do you want to talk
about
it later?
No, you lay it on me, Doc.
Okay. All right. Well, so, Akihiko, when toward the end of the episode, he comes back to Ugetsu's apartment. And first of all, you know, when he begins to disrobe, let me just, like, shout out to Akihiko's back. Like, holy shit.
That back don't
that
crack.
That's a back, man. That's a big, like, mountainous region. Like, the topography of the back is, it's quite something. Like, very, very good. Good on you, buddy. But I need to start carrying a fucking drums around, apparently. He shows Ugetsu the, he produces the magical yellow USB drive and shows Ugetsu the live performance. And Ugetsu's thinking about Mafuyu and saying, well, you know, he's not bad, but this kid could be big. If he had the right kind of trigger. And I'm just like, no, Jesus, fuck. Like, don't, like, is this going to be fucking, like, is he going to be like, all right, I'm an evil genius now. And what I'm going to do is create artificial shitty drama between you and Uenoyama. Like, I don't know, maybe I'll ask you out and I'll break your heart. And, like, do all this stupid shit to, like, put him through the emotional ringer so that he can sing good and write sad song. Like, I hope this doesn't happen. That's what I thought when he said that. I don't want anybody fucking around with him. I don't want like, can Ugetsu just leave the anime?
Can he just go? Can he just do Getsu out?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, God, you know, he is basically...
I'm so nervous about this.
He is basically a black-haired Goro Akechi at this point, so there you go.
Yeah. What did you think when you heard that?
Well, here's the thing, right? There's been a lot of discussion throughout the show about music being about communication, getting your feelings across, and that clearly Matthew hasn't been able to, like, simply write for the sake of writing it or, like, perform for the sake of performing for it. It's been driven by his emotion. But I think the point that we're going to try and go into with this in the show is that, you know, some of the greatest performances in the world, and indeed some of the greatest art ever put out by Missions has been by people who've been very tortured. I mean, I can think of, for example, Kurt Cobain, or I cannot remember his name off the top of my head, and I really feel bad for it, but he's the lead singer of Soundgarden. What was his name again?
Chris Cornell.
Thank you, Chris Cornell. I was getting Scott in my head for some reason. I couldn't recall. I don't know why. Or even Amy Winehouse, for example.
Like, were you thinking of Scott Stapp from Creed?
No, definitely not. Absolutely not. But yeah, like, how many artists have we lost over the years? Or even Chester Bennington from Linkin Park. Like, how many artists have we lost to suicide who otherwise were incredibly talented? And I wouldn't, of course, presume a link between mental illness and creativity. But also, you can't exactly, you know, deny the correlation there. So the point...
Yeah, I mean, stereotypes exist for a reason.
Yeah.
But I would push back, like you said. Just I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to... put my opinion down here and just say, like, that to posit that there is a causal link or even some kind of logical necessity between great art or great music and suffering is like the height of folly and sort of selectively picking what's great. Because there have been so many great artists and musicians that are not suicidal, who have had regular lives, who have had good lives, like all kinds of different, like it takes all kinds, and all kinds of different people from all kinds of walks of life have made great things. And so it's like this fucking whole deal about, like, oh, like, you know, all these fucking movie directors who abuse women and are nasty to them. Well, this is like, you know, this is just part of what it takes to be great in this industry. You know, they gotta you gotta be a little bit of an asshole to be like all that, like that attitude can fucking kick rocks and jump off a bridge into a river. Like, go away.
Exactly.
Go away.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I think that to bring it all back to Ugetsu, maybe that's his opinion, which I should say is not one I agree with. And I think the show's in the positive is not one to agree with either. That, you know, art comes from suffering. So maybe the idea going along is, I mean, you said, for example, you don't want to see this. I, again, am going to take the position of I wouldn't mind seeing it from the perspective of being good for drama. Not to the degree where he's so manipulative, mind you. But I want to see that relationship explore where now that Matthew's actually got that out there, like, can he find a way to create art without relying on his painful experiences or his pain in general? Can he now do that? Because he couldn't do it before. So what happens next? Can he instead, you know, create art from, like, love? Like, you know,
yeah.
That would be the lessons to be learned. Like, so I don't mind Ugetsu getting involved in that way. I certainly don't want him to start doing some, like, you know, chess master, you know, shit like that.
Exactly. I don't want, like, this show to have an antagonist.
No. But I don't mind the idea being tested. I mean, maybe it's a bit presumptuous for me to assume the answer before the show even posits the question. But as I say, like, I don't mind the idea now of, like, what next for Matthew? Like, can he, you know, produce art? Can he sing without relying on those experiences? Can they, as you say, perhaps become part of a synthesis that informs his future performances without being defined by them? Because, I mean, let's be honest, as good as that previous performance was, it was defined entirely by his experiences with Yuki. So what's next?
I think what's implied... that he wants to do, and this is my sort of assuming from context, when my Ritsuko was taking care of him when he was sick, I think what he wants to write about next, like you were saying, is love. I think, and you know, the fact that Ueno Yama was like, oh, next time I hope it's me that he's performing for and about. Like, I suspect that is where we're going. Now, if we take a detour before we get there, for the sake of drama, I mean, I guess as long as it's not a fucking... You know, we get evil laugh, like, you know, Ugetsu at the top of a dark tower with like lightning coming down.
Are you kidding? Yeah, that'd be the tits. I'd love that.
Fucking like bubbling a cauldron. Like, oh, I just don't need this. I don't need it at all.
I do. I think that'd be great. Not literally that though. Like, I know you're speaking metaphorically, but I would totally be fine with him just being like fucking Gargamel from the Smurfs or something.
Can if that happens, can Akihiko please like run to the top of the tower and throw him out of the window?
I would be okay with that too. We'll make God. It'll be great.
He's just kind of a pretentious dick. At this moment, I don't really like him.
No, nor do I.
At all.
Not to mention, I don't think we've actually seen him like leave the apartment yet. What does he do?
We've only seen him coming back that one time.
Is he a vampire?
He might be. I think he is.
I'm sorry, Akiko. Oh. I cannot be exposed to sunlight. Yeah, you can. No, I can't. I'm just scared.
I can only play violin at the night.
Yeah. The only
we have to live in this freezer.
The only vitamin D he's getting is vitamin D for douchebag.
Ayo.
Ayo. All right. Okay. So my next talking point, I'm going to revisit a little bit of old ground here, but just to offer a new twist on it. Let's talk about Ayo again. And I know I mispronounced the name then, but fuck it, I don't care.
That's okay.
So, now I'm self-conscious of it. Shit.
That's okay. Sister.
Ueniyama's sister. female character number 213. Sister subtype.
The hottest one of all the ones.
She gets dumped at some point, because it happens off
screen. Quote unquote.
Who knows?
You get dumped if you're not going out. I think that's very presumptuous on her part.
I pass. Clearly, she feels very strongly about it.
Yes.
So here's the thing, right? In the previous episode, when our long talk about how I wish Yayoi and also to a lesser degree Kasai were more involved in the plot as allies, not as romantic interests of any sort. No way. And if they were involved at that level, it would only then to have them transition from that to being allies instead. And I felt that was kind of a problem. But now that this has kind of just been wrapped up in the way it has been, I do have to question what ultimate purpose she serves in the show. Because she's only otherwise really been to provide one or two comedic moments. And I'm sure people can chime in and say, well, there was this bit that you missed. And I'm more than happy to hear that. But it kind of recontextualizes my criticism in that there's two ways you can look at this. Either A, this is something Given is trying to talk about, but is failing at. Or B, the one I'm now leaning more towards, it was never talking about that in the first place, but this is a place it could expand into in the future as something else to discuss. Because I think, if being honest, when Yayoi like contextualized that as like, you know, that she was never really going out with Akiko in the first place, if you think back to all the experiences they've shared together or like all the scenes we've seen of them together, that pretty much rings true, I would argue. It didn't feel like they were really a genuine couple. She feels so strongly about it to cut her hair in a show where we have another couple, one of whom kills themselves over a shallowish argument. Don't know. Not so sure on that one. I'm not going to hold it against the show, mind you. I think it's just a coincidence that happened more than anything. I'm not, like, mad about it. Just something to note. But yeah,
I think Ueki's wrong about the shallow nature of their argument.
Well, yeah. We can only go off what we know, though. But again, like, that whole thing, like, you know, of here's what was said versus how one interprets it, that's exactly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the commonality. But I'm not going to dwell on it, because I ultimately don't really mind, nor am I holding against the show. Because, let's be honest, Yayoi's role has been peripheral, shall we say. But that just then makes me ask why she's in the show at all. To throw pillows at Ueniyama from off screen. I mean, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Lay on him.
So that's quite funny, don't get me wrong. But all in all, I think that, especially given now Kasai has returned, I think it's going to be something that I'll just say that I wish the show explored, which was the idea of people being allies to LGBTQ plus characters, like Ueniyama, like particularly the family thing, because, I mean, hell, we've got Ueniyama's father in there now. So it would be nice to have them involved in a way where they could ultimately, you know, say, we're cool with it. To build on that, you know, examination of, like, nascent LGBTQ plus sexuality by involving an element that often is probably one of the most difficult things for a person to deal with, which is their immediate family. but that doesn't seem to have happened or will happen as far as I can tell. And maybe it will. There is still time.
Maybe when they like officially start going out. Maybe.
And I would love nothing more than there just be a long scene in which they talk it out and you're always like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm totally cool with you. I'm totally cool with him. I'm glad you're happy. Why the fuck did you think this in the first place?
Yeah, and, or why are you telling me something I already knew?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. I would love a scene like that because, like I say, I think that I personally would want and hope I am trying to be or am being a good ally. And that will always form a part of, you know, LCQ+ experiences because groups don't exist in a vacuum. We intermingle, we cross over. So I think that, as I say, it's not an element of the show I'm going to criticize as being weak because I don't think it intends to explore it, but I do think it's a place that the story and the ideas could ultimately expand into in the future. One final stressor, of course, is I don't want any like heterosexual, like romantic rivals for Inuyama or Matthew or any of that crap because that's not what the show is. Because that's not what the show is about. You know, in other shows that'd be
what
fine.
What about Ueki maybe being like, you know, a love interest or feeling like he wants to? Would you settle for gay rivals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
If there were love triangles, I don't think that one has a chance of happening. And I feel like he's kind of I don't recall the name of his kind of tall, dark haired friend slash more than friend, but I feel like they are meant to be together because he's comforting him. You know what I mean?
Oh God, you're thinking of Hiragi, is that right?
Yeah. I guess his surname is Ueki. Because that's who I'm pulling because that's what he got called in the episode. But yeah, like he's I guess a potential rival for Mafuyu's affections. He seems to, you know, be quite interested in him and kind of not know how to express it.
Yeah,
similarly to Uenoyama. But he also gets like burned this episode, which I thought was incredibly funny.
It is true. But the reason I think that I would be fine with that in this case is because it would again play into, not just apart from simply, you know, giving shippers something to talk about, you know,
right,
getting those shipping schedules out, boys, boats coming in, but rather because I think that would play into Ueniyama's growing, like, new problem, which is, I want to be shown more affection through song and etc. from Matthew. And what if someone else is showing affection towards him? How do I then feel about it? I've only just come to terms with who I am, and now I feel that's threatened in some way.
Yeah.
That'd
be good.
That's why I think that it would be relevant. Having a hetero rival, like I say, like, no point. I'm not buying a porn mag to, you know, read about electric razors and shit like that, so why the fuck would people watch a boiler thing to, you know, have heterosexual rivals in there? It's daft.
Yeah.
It's funny because I'm right.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I'm joking,
I guess maybe for Aki, since he's sort of established already as bi, but I think actually people are already here for him in Ugetsu. I think that would just be annoying to people.
Well, they've already disposed of Yayoi off screen. So,
yeah.
So I don't think that was ever... Yeah. Like, he could still be bisexual, don't get me wrong. But I think insofar as how it will... like present him and what he will ultimately deal with in terms of his own relationships, it will be guy on guy.
Yeah, they kind of put a bullet in that one, so you're right.
And that's why I say that I just wish there was more involvement. Otherwise, I just don't like. I don't get what would be lost if you jettisoned Yayoi from the show entirely, apart from the comedic stuff. But I'm talking about stuff of like substance.
Right.
What do you lose? I got nothing. Like I say, you could replace Kasai with a newspaper. That's I still stand by.
No, just a random sandwich board with instructions on it. Yeah, like I'm hopeful that, you know, so while some people in our Discord have been saying, which by the way you can join for as little as $2 a month, go to patreon.com/waruidesho now and sign up.
Sorry.
beard stroke. People have been saying that it seems to be getting some traction, so they're more optimistic about a second season. So maybe the second season, Yayoi gets her time to shine.
I don't know. Or even how about Ueniyama's parents? I mean, the parents have been absent from most of this, with the exception of arguably Matthew's father. He's had the most screen time out of any of them. And, well, guess what? He got sent to jail for abusing him. So that's great.
Oh my God.
So that's fantastic. But again, like, that's why I want these elements to be involved, these family elements, because they're a big part of, you know, just coming to terms with who you are growing up, especially if you're, you know, LGBTQ+. Like, you and I, Doc, we've spoken to people who've been on this podcast before and others elsewhere who've related experiences about how they still struggle to deal with their families these days. Like, I'm not, of course, going to name anyone or speak for their experiences. That's not my place. But I know people who said that they, you know, still can't deal with, like, for example, their family talking about their dead name because they're trans. So it's a big part of, you know, of learning that you're LGBTQ+, and then accepting it, and then trying in turn to, you know, get the world to accept you as well, and having people you've lived for your entire life maybe not accept that, or maybe even, you know, absolutely accept it. That would make the show more relevant, in my opinion. So that's why I want Yayoi to be more involved, just to be clear, folks. Again, I don't want no, like, you know, romance rivalry shit for Akiko, but I wanted to play a pivotal part in Ueniyama's, like, you know, growing understanding of who he is. Because that's, in real life, that's how that would play out. And that doesn't even mean that she necessarily needs to agree with him. We could totally go down the road where she doesn't like him being gay. And guess what? He could then, you know, discard her as a family member because, speaking from my own experience here, as I have done before, you know, blood might run thicker than water, apparently, but you can't fucking drink it, unless you're, again, a vampire, I suppose. So if you have toxic family members who aren't accepting who you are, get rid. That's another good lesson that people can and should learn. And the show could potentially have. Like, that's the thing when I say it's not about it doing it wrong, it's about expanding. There's plenty of potential whatever way you take it. And as it is, she throws pillows and looks pouty. Cool.
Don't complain.
By the way, can I point something out as
well? Don't take that away.
Can I point something out as well, just to leave this on a lighter note? You might note that Yayoi, in the scene where she's cutting her hair, is wearing the exact same outfit that she was wearing at the gig, but it's the day after.
Right.
Did she fall asleep in that?
Yes, unquestionably, yes.
Or was she Lisa Simpsoning, where she's just always got the same dress no matter what?
And I want to see the finished haircut. Come on, Given. You're teasing me. Show me the finished haircut next episode, please.
Just gonna look like she's been mauled by a mountain lion. Let's not kid ourselves.
No. That can't be.
All right. Okay. Do you have any more talk about socks? I have one last one.
Well, I wanted to say that I told you that Haruki would be the fucking social media account manager.
Yeah, you were right.
He's the only one responsible enough and, like, I don't know, that seems to have any kind of wherewithal about how things like that work, like, and wouldn't be neglectful. So, yes, they're pushing off all the work on him to do the accounts. And by the way, what was his buddy's, his patron's name? That followed him on Twitter. It was like the Roast Pork Boys or something.
Oh, God.
It's tremendous.
He knows what he's into, and he's got a sweet Twitter picture as well.
He does. He knows how to get his brand out there. Yeah. But
I've got my brand out there. Headphones and a giant mug of beer.
Boom. That's perfect.
Perfect. Love it.
Perfect. But yeah, Haruki, holding it down. Doing the little things that are going to get the band momentum and keep it going. And fuck yeah, like, you know, Akihiko, notice your boy there. If he's, you know, if you're going to tell him to be a little more conceited, notice him. Why don't you show him your back? Okay, not just Ugetsu, the prick. I wanted to ask you what you thought of... So, you know, you mentioned the father, Mr. Ueniyama. But there's another sort of new character this episode. At least she's named. Now, we saw her briefly in the last episode. Don't confuse her with the famous blitzball player of Spira. It's Waka.
Oh, yes.
What do you think about her little moment this episode?
I thought it was fine. Like, I didn't have much really say on it other than it was just, again, like a reflection of audience reaction. Like, we got to see it, but now someone gets to verbalize it. Like, hey, you know, I was really taken aback by it. And I want to see them again. So this also ties in with the fact that Roast Pork Boy, I can't remember his name, said, yeah, hey, can we have another gig? Like, you get to see both sides. You get to see the organizer, you get to see the public side of it. But otherwise, don't really have much to remark on, because it just seemed more like a statement of, like, hey, I liked it, I enjoyed it, and that's what we saw in the previous episode. But I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I liked it too. I mean, it was further confirmation of the observation that I made last time. I think that a person got it in the audience, like that he, not just that like people were enjoying it, but I felt like her, at least, if no one else, understood him. You know, because she says like, oh, I knew him, I went to school with him. Based on knowing him, I feel like I know what that song is about. And so it really hit me. Like, I shivered all the way down to the bottom of my feet. I had to grab my boyfriend's hand. Like, she really got it. Like, he really connected with someone. And it's like, you know, I she hasn't really had her own stuff to do, but just from her reportage of her experiences and everything, like, it just made me happier even for Mafuyu. So I was happy she was there to relate those things.
Indeed. All right, final talking point for me. Let's talk about those good old heartstrings. Oh, boy. So Ueniyama spends the first part of the episode monologuing to himself in his head about how the heart is like the strings of a guitar. And heartstrings is such an obvious thing that I'm sure so many people have heard of before. I'll not labor the point of what he discussed. But what I will bring up is what Matthew says later on when he's going shopping for strings. Like, they have he has a discussion with Hiragi where he says, you know, I've got these replaced, like, you know, they won't break again. But Hiragi says that's something to the effect of, that's nonsense. And I feel this is kind of prophetic in a little way, because if you tie it back to the original discussion, like, just because Matthew, like, has now got past that big moment of getting his feelings out there through song, it doesn't mean his pain is going to go away, and it doesn't mean he won't be exposed to any more pain in the future. Which is why I think that might be a sign that not right now, but in the future, of rocky waters between him and Ueniyama. And here's the thing, though. That, from a storytelling perspective, is fine, and it's actually healthy, I would argue, from a storytelling perspective. And this is, one of the things I like about Given so much, that it's not naive about, well, at least in certain respects, with regards to the family stuff I mentioned before, but I'll leave that aside. But it's not naive in, you know, saying that, hey, it's, you know, you'll figure out who you are and you're done. And it's great, you know. Learning starts with a realization, but then you build from there. You build your knowledge up, you build your understanding, you build your wisdom. And that, I think, applies here too. So I think that Hiragi's, like, discussion with Matthew there about strings and the fact that any string can snap, even if they've been replaced, is the show, again, pointing out to us, with the context of Ueniyama's in the monologue before, that he suffered heartbreak once, some of the worst, most harshest heartbreak one could experience, something that I'd wish on no one. But it doesn't mean that he's not going to experience it again, or some kind of pain or, you know, discomfort or anxiety or concern about his emotions or his love life or his relationships. And I really appreciate that. Like, I complained a little bit in one of the previous discussions we had about the idea of, you know, how his strings wound up too tight as a bit too on the nose. But I like how it develops this concept further now to actually be relevant to the characters specifically, and to remind us that, you know, hey, we'll continue to keep fucking up. We'll continue to keep making mistakes. And that doesn't mean we should, you know, not try to make mistakes, you know, or try not to hurt each other. We should always try to be good to each other. But inevitably, things will happen. Conflict will happen despite best of intentions. But like I say, you just got to keep replacing them and keep on going.
Yeah, well said. Well said. I was also glad that they revisited this, that it wasn't like an easy kind of slam dunk one-off metaphor. They're like, oh, let's see, you know, let's explore, let's make this like a motif thematically, so to speak, and let's touch upon this further. But yeah, no, I'm with you, absolutely.
All right. Well, I think that if I don't think you have any other points to add, am
nope.
I right? So I think otherwise concludes our look at Wonderwall, episode 10, Give 10 of Given.
And Give 10.
Hey, the show continues to be great. One final thing I'll note, by the way, that's not really a massive talking point, but just something I'm really pleased about. You and I, Doc, have talked and even covered shows before that reach a certain climax about three quarters of the way through their runtime. And after that point, the show is pretty much over, but continues going. Two examples that immediately spring to mind for me, although we've never really discussed them at length on the podcast, with one exception maybe. First one being Erased. Because once Inazuki, you know, has been rescued, then the momentum just kind of goes out of the sails of the show, in my opinion. It's nowhere near as compelling to watch.
I wonder if the one I have in mind is the one you will name.
It probably won't be, but the other one I have in mind is Violet Evergarden.
Oh, not the one, because I haven't finished that one.
What are you
I was
doing?
Gonna say, I know. It's bad. I'm bad. I was going to make the controversial pick of Yuri on Ice.
We'll disagree on that one, but that's fair. So yeah, like you have shows like that where once they've reached their emotional climax at the three quarters point, they have nothing else to do with their characters. Like, they've run out of ideas. I mean, in Violet Evergarden, once Violet comes to a realization of like who she is and that she doesn't need to be so worried about following, you know, the orders of her superior who's now dead, she still, of course, has episodes where she goes out and does her job, like the incredibly fucking heartbreaking one involving the child. I'll not say anymore because you've not seen it, actually, and I want you to experience that raw so you can bleed as I bled, because holy shit.
Did you see the OAV that recently popped up on Netflix?
I will do at some point. It'll happen at some point. But anyway, like, for me, you could have ended it at the episode where Violet, like, comes to that realization. And similarly with Erased, like, wider murder plot notwithstanding, you could have ended at the point in which Inazuki is saved from her abusive father.
Yeah, I liked it all. I liked that one all the way through. And to be clear, I liked Yuri on Ice all the way through. I was just, I felt like artificial drama perhaps was created at the end, like a walking back of things and artificial drama to create kind of this moment at the end that I thought, like, we'd already gotten there. Like, why are you doing this? Maybe this is just me, like, not appreciating good drama and wanting my characters to be happy. and I'll chalk it up to that. But I like all those shows, and I like Violet Evergarden, so I need to get back to it.
You should. But to bring it back to Given, like, we've had a similar kind of thing here where the climactic, like, big moment of the entire show. I mean, come on, we're not going to see another moment like Matthew singing for the first time in the next episode. I don't see how they can do it. I don't see how they can make something that powerful in the next episode. There's no time to build up for a start. But here's the point, though. That's not a bad thing. And I'm still compelled to see what happens next, because Given is doing what those shows could not. It's got something for the characters to do going forward. We can see already the seeds being planted of issues and problems for Inuyama, particularly as he's just still coming to terms with who he is and what his relationship is with Matthew. It's not run out of things to do with them. That's the most important thing. So I'm really, really glad it's done that. And
we need to see him play this basketball game already. Okay, that's what I want to say. I wanted to see him win the basketball tournament.
This is true. But yeah, like the show has definitely done that, and I'm super glad it has.
I totally agree. I'm glad you brought this up. I really am, because this could have happened, right? I mean, it could have been, well, we've done the thing, so let's just fuck around for a couple weeks. But you know, since this is an adaptation, it seems like they've got new stuff and more in the way of direction to push toward. But yeah, I'm super glad that the final couple weeks will hold my interest, you know, just as much as it's ever been held by the show.
Indeed. And in turn, if you listening at home would like to join us as we close out Given next week, and if you would also in turn like access to other amazing patron-only content, do feel free to subscribe for as little as $2 a month. Get in on that. And if you're listening to this elsewhere for the first time when it's been released publicly, feel free to give us a like and subscribe on SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, wherever you may find this. Always helps our discoverability. We will be back next week for the finale. I believe this is the last one, as I understand it, because it's only 11 episode series, with Song 2. I had to physically restrain myself. That was a game of chicken, that wasn't it? Which one of us would do it first? So yeah. So anyway, we'll be back next week with Song 2. Sorry. There we go.
I was feeling too metal. There you go.
And by the way, can I just say, like, I've not even seen the episode yet, but that song feels so appropriate as a send-off, just of pure, unbridled energy.
I know.
It's so good. It's so good.
Yes.
And
it mirrors the feelings I have, I think, that at the end of this ride.
Damn straight. So... until next time, folks, thank you as always very much for joining us. If you do have feedback, we're always curious to hear that as well, be you a patron or not. Feel free to let us know either on Twitter at WarioDeshow or, you know, on our Discord if you're a patron. Always look happy to hear your opinions. And from myself and Doc, we'll return next week for Song 2, final episode of Given, you know. Maybe they'll do us an encore, we don't know, but it's been a good gig regardless. So until then, as always, embrace everyone to the ends of the universe and a very good night.
Mwah. Good evening.